Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Adjust your earbuds for this one, because we're going to go back in time to one of the greatest college football teams in history, the 1899 Sewanee Tigers. David Neal Drew's author of Iron Tigers, a novel inspired by the team that conquered Dixie and launched Southern football, is up next to talk about this legendary football team with their amazing six-day football journey, which is unprecedented in football history.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we get to talk about some great gridiron history from yesteryear. We're going to go back some 125 years almost and go to a team that has a very interesting history with an author that's wrote a book about them. His name is David Neal Drews, and he has wrote the book Iron Tigers. David Neal Drews, welcome to the Pigpen.
Thank you, Darren. I'm really excited to be here. I love this podcast.
Well, David, we thank you for that. And we love your book, and it's got such an interesting topic, and we'll get into that in just a little bit here. But, first we want to learn a little bit about you. We love to, when our guests come on for the first time, especially like you are today, we want to make sure we know a little bit about you so we can be familiar. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your football fandom that took you to the point of writing a book about a team from yesteryear?
Well, my football fandom began in 1970 when my father took me to my first college football game. It was here in Knoxville, where I live, at the University of Tennessee. UT was playing UCLA, and I was 7 years old, and I was hooked. And that's the year I started playing football, and I've been a big UT Vols fan ever since. Go to the games. What brought me to I used to teach high school English, and then I decided to give it a – I thought I could teach high school English and be a writer, but I couldn't pull both off. So I left teaching and devoted full-time to writing. But what brought me to this 1899 Sewanee team was my passion for – originally for my passion for sports, in terms of sports history, specifically – how a sport began and how a sport evolved. And, breaking it down to, who were the founders, who were the first stars, what were the uniforms, what were the rules, how did all of that change over time? I'm just fascinated by that, whether it's football or any other sport, golf. I'm fascinated by the early years of baseball, basketball, but even minor sports. So I picked up a book, in my quest for more and more knowledge about the beginnings of sports. I picked up this book. I bet anything you're familiar with. It's called The Opening Kickoff, The Tumultuous Birth of a Football Nation, written by, you know it.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So for your listeners, it's written by Dave Revson. And I've read this book twice, and it is about the first 30 years. It goes from the Princeton-Rutgers game up till the forward pass in 1906, just before that. And so that really made me thirsty for more early football knowledge. So it led me to the 1899 Sewanee Tigers, who in the midst of a 12-game season got on a train and rode 2,500 miles and shut out five teams in 6 days in the midst of a nine game, or I'm sorry, a 9-day trip, they shut out five teams in 6 days. They played five teams in 6 days and shut them all out. So I knew some people in, being from East Tennessee, Suwannee's in Middle Tennessee, up in the Cumberland Mountains. I knew a few people who had gone to Suwannee. I knew a little bit about the school's history. I knew it was a special place, but I didn't know anything about this team. And then I started digging into it. And it's like, it's amazing how, what a low percentage of Southern football fans actually know about this team. And the, my subtitle, so the name of my historical fiction piece that's inspired by these guys, it's the title is Iron Tigers, a novel inspired by the team that conquered Dixie and launched Southern football. And I think it's a very, very convincing case that this is the team that launched Southern football.
I think you're quite right. And, you know, I'm in football history all the time, and I personally, I love the era of the late 1890s and early 1900s football. It's just, it fascinates me because it's such an era that we don't know much about because there wasn't good sports writing and journalism, and people really, you know, half the people were against football at that time before the forward passes. You know, you see about probably about 5 years later after your story's taking place with everything that was going on in the country. And it's just a great thing. And now I think we're revealing a lot, peeling back a lot of layers of the onion in our modern age, going back 120 some years ago and finding out a lot about these teams. And I think it's great. And I almost equate them, and maybe unfairly, you know, up here in Pennsylvania, we have, you know, Washington and Jefferson, and it's almost have a similar story, a small school that people, you know, today don't really know anything about or don't relate them to football anyway. Maybe education they do, but powerhouses they were back in that era, and it's just fascinating. But yeah, the Suwannee, I totally agree with you. I think they really put the South on the map and opened up the doors for the Alabamas and the LSUs of the world, you know, before they
absolutely
knew it.
yeah, they really did. In fact, but you're so right. I mean, so many of these schools that were there at the beginning and launching college football, you know, they're Division III now, and unfortunately, not very many people pay attention to them. Suwannee's Division III now, but yeah, I think it's an extraordinary part of the story that these small schools, they brought this sport into the American landscape. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah, you put together that, you know, WJ, Suwannee, the Chicago Maroons, you know, teams like Lafayette, you know, these teams they're all, I think, D3 now, and or D2 anyway, and what powerhouses they were back in their era, and what contributions they brought to the game, and the legendary player names that came out of them, and fantastic stories like you're going to share with us tonight. So this is exciting.
What you mentioned, Chicago, the Chicago Maroons, I would have loved to have seen a championship, a national championship game between the Suwannee team of 1899 and the Chicago Maroons of 1899. They both went undefeated. Chicago, Alonzo Stagg's men went 16, no losses and one tie. And the Suwannee men went 12-0. It would have been great for them to have a matchup, but it's a really cool part of football history.
Yeah, most definitely. Okay, so let's before we get too far into your book. Now you gave us the title. Let's take this opportunity. Where can folks get a copy of this book?
Okay, so you can go on Amazon or BookBaby and just type in Iron Tigers and then my last name, Drews, D as in David, R-E-W-S. You can also go to IronTigersFootball.com. And on that website, you can watch a 90-second video that's like a movie trailer for the book. And you can also order the book. There are links to Amazon BookBaby there. Eventually, I'm going to have a way where people can order directly from me so I can send out signed copies. But that's not awesome. There yet, but it will be.
Excellent. Well, folks, if you're driving or you don't have a pen and pencil to write this down, we're going to have in the show note links to David, what he's talking about, to both the Amazon link and to his website, so you can get that information at a later time. We'll also have it on Pigskin Dispatch for this Iron Tigers episode that we're going to be having posted the same day that the episode releases. And you go in our search box under Iron Tigers, you should be able to find it there as well and get to David and his book. So what else you tell us? Okay, you told us a little bit about what inspired you to write the book. You have some interesting features about it, because it is a fictional book about a real team. So maybe you could lay some of those ground rules down to what you got going on.
Yeah, it's really important. So I like to tell people that I basically took the bones, meaning the factual record, and put the flesh on those bones, and the flesh being the imagined elements of the book. So in terms of what the 1899 Suwannee team did, who they played, the scores, that's all part of the historic record. That's all there. In addition to that, I took there, for example, some of the players when they were adults would write letters to each other and they would recall certain scenes from that trip. And so when I went up to Suwannee, went into the archives and looked at these materials, I would just take something, you know, a sentence or something or a description that a player gave of, you know, so-and-so, like here's an example. So-and-so when we got to New Orleans was doing too much girling. I was like, when I read that, I was like, I have to write this book just because of that word. But, you know, so, you know, it made me think, well, these are college men in New Orleans, you know, with a night off. And so there's a little that was in the school newspaper. The best source for this book was the school newspaper, because the team's student manager, this guy named Luke Lee, Alfie Melville in my book, but Luke Lee in real life. Mm-hmm. He, after every game, he's on the trip with them. And after every game, like the first game was in Austin, they played Texas. And after the game at the Union Station, before they loaded up on the train, he would send in to the Suwannee newspaper, he would telegraph them a play-by-play account of the game for each one of these five games on this road trip. And so you talk about a great primary source. I mean, this guy was there, and within hours he was sending it off to his school newspaper. But so I would take, I would glean things that were interesting about where they went, what they did. One guy said in a letter to a buddy that was on that team with him that, do you remember that chicken we had in the middle of the night in Texarkana? It's like, so that's in my book. Yeah. The idea of these kids, you know, they've already been on the train for 13, 14 hours when they get to Texarkana. It's the middle of the night and there's an all night diner. It's $18.99 and they're eating fried chicken. It's just, you know, that might've been what launched Southern football, actually.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, you know, reading the book, I love details, and I love little, you know, sideshows from the main story. And you do a lot of that in your writing. I mean, you talked about the girling. Well, your book opens up and there's a little bit of girling going on there. One of the main players is he's late for this train that's going to be taking off. I believe that's where they were getting ready to depart, and he happened to be, you know, probably where you coach wouldn't want him to be, or probably his parents didn't want him to be. He was right. Visiting a young lady, and was running a little bit late, and everybody knew it. And so that was just a great element of the story. And you know, you talk about the Alfie character that you know, based on Luke Lee, you know, he you can tell he's a central character to you, because everything's coming off him. And this character, the way you've depicted him, is an amazing individual. Not only is he balancing all these arrangements for the team on this, you know, long trip and these games and everything, but he's also sort of playing a little bit of a game, not a game, but balancing things out, because of two African-American gents that are traveling with the team, as you know, and you know, going through the South at that era of time is not you know, the most best atmosphere for these folks to go into, but he treats them with such respect throughout and helps them get through some encounters that they may have, or some or gets through some problems that they weren't, but just fantastic character buildup of him and all the characters you have in there. So it's very enjoyable. And I love the detail that, like that.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Those are very kind words. And yeah, I fall in love with details too when I read fiction or nonfiction. Yeah, so you're talking about Alfie Melville, who, like you said, is based on the actual Luke Leed. To tell you a little bit about, and your listeners, a little bit about Luke Leed, this guy, as you can imagine, he set this whole trip up. He orchestrated this whole trip. He had the administration behind him because, you know, the South was in the doldrums at the time. You know, they were, you know, the Civil War, they lost the Civil War. Like the North, they lost millions of men. But the South, you know, experienced Reconstruction afterwards. The economy was still in the ruins, but in ruins by the time we got to the 1890s. And the whole concept of Southern manhood was in the dirt. And the these kids at Swanee, I mean, it's an elite school. You know, today it's a very expensive school to attend. And it was an all male school at the time in 1899. They had about 320 students, but they were all from very wealthy families, and many of them, if not most of them, were slave owning families prior to the prior to the Civil War and the Emancipation Act. So Luke Leed, for example, he was from a Nashville family that was very prominent and had thousands of acres and had hundreds of slaves. So he comes from this kind of background, but he was so invested in Swanee being at the vanguard of Southern football. And he had the alumni and he had the administration behind him, like I had said. He was audacious enough to put this schedule together. I mean, who in their right mind sends a team 2,500 miles and says you're going to play five back-to-back, or you're going to play five games in 6 days? And they're all bigger schools than Swanee, in addition to that. But he was going for broke because he wanted the Northeastern newspapers. You know, as you know, Darren, it was all about Yale, Harvard, Penn, and Princeton back then. And then the Midwest was just getting involved, you know, in the 1880s, I would say, right?
Right.
But the Northeast, especially those four teams, were still the dominant teams. And the Northeastern newspapers, they, you know, Southern football, what is that? It was an afterthought. And Luke Leed, a proud, you know, man, young man of the South, he wanted to change that. You know, he had relatives that went to Princeton, and later he went to Columbia Law School. So they knew about the Eastern establishment, and they knew that the generation before them was beaten down because of, you know, seceding from the Union and fighting the war and then Reconstruction and switching from an agrarian slave economy to you know, agrarian economy, but really hadn't been transformed into any type of industrial economy. And this, so Luke Leed was part of the New South. And it's like, okay, Dad, Grandpa, you know, we're taking over, and we're gonna urbanize. We're gonna bring glory to the South. So he was really determined to make this happen, and he knew he had to do something spectacular to get the Northeast to notice, to get the other Southern colleges to notice that, hey, college football in the South is a real thing. It didn't start in the South till 1890. I think Virginia had the first team in 1889, you know, given their proximity to, you know, like Princeton. But college football didn't start in the South until 1890. And Swanee's first team was 1891. So he wanted the rest of the South to wake up and say, this is how Southern male identity will be determined. This is a vehicle for us to have a renaissance in the South. And so he sets up this crazy schedule. And what he did by taking on the roles that he took on, he was laying out the blueprint for Southern football and for the as a cultural phenomenon, as not just a sport, but as a cultural phenomenon. And he was also laying out what an athletic director could be, or really what an athletic department could be. But he was the only guy. He was the student manager. So he wore all the hats. And my sense is that nobody else was going to the lengths and covering as many bases as he was. Now, there's a controversy in terms of whether or not they had two African-American rub men, also called, you know, the trainers and called rub men. I think they were much, based on my research, they were much more than rub men, although that was a very important part, the service that they provided their players with. But there's controversy whether there were two on that train or one. Only one name is mentioned, and that's a gentleman whose name was Cal Burrows. And Cal was a garbage collector by day, and he was an athletic trainer for the Swanee football and baseball team. We don't know anything about Cal after 1899. The record just goes blank. Yeah. Which is a metaphor, you know, how history has treated so many African-American stories and people in the past. Yeah.
Very true. I mean, you and your character that plays the part of Cal is Henry, and Henry is probably one of the more lovable characters in the story. This man is doing everything. He's sort of Alfie is the organizer and the point man for everything. Well, Henry is there picking up all the pieces and juggling, and just, I mean, so hospitable and nurturing to everything that these traveling group is doing the whole way. I mean, putting, you know, barrels of water from the local spring on the train so they're drinking, because it doesn't want them to have dysentery. I remember that from the book. I mean, just the little details like that, just a magnificent character that you developed there.
I enjoy Henry very much. I'm glad you do. Yeah, he's and he's also a way for me to ultimately, well, I don't want to give too much away, but Henry, as you know, what he does with his life after 1899, we'll leave that that storyline for the readers to enjoy.
Absolutely.
But it's an opportunity to give a little bit of credit to all the people that were first generation sons and daughters out of slavery who went on and did really remarkable things. Henry will always be near and dear to my heart, especially Henry. They all will, because I was on the train with them for 5 years researching and writing this. But Henry and Jordan will always be close to my heart, as will Joseph. And we'll just throw Joseph's name out there and leave it at that.
Okay, that's fair enough. All right, let's get into the trip. Okay, they're playing these six ball teams, and you know, we've talked a little bit about them. Why don't we identify who they played in that trip?
Okay, so they're on the train for a day and a half, and they reach Austin. The next day, they play the University of Texas. University of Texas, and you notice as a lifelong ball, I will not say the U and then followed by the letter that comes after S. the University of Texas, they weren't the Longhorns yet, by the way, but they play them, and they shut them out 12-0. In front of a big crowd. There, you can go online to the Swanee archive, the digital archive. You can see this really cool program from the game, with actual photos of one of the Swanee stars and a photo of one of the Texas stars. So that game's fascinating to me because they're playing a much bigger school. They've been on a train for a day and a half, but also, it was the only school that was really recognized by the Northeast. Walter Camp's All-American team, the previous year, 1898, not a single Southern football team player is named to the team except for Joe Abbott, a large guard that played for the Texas team. He was the only Southerner named to Walter Camp's All-American team for that year. And so I inserted him into the book and into the story of that Texas game. So then they get on the train that night. Actually, it was so civilized. You remember that? You know that picture, 1869, Princeton and Rutgers. They play, and then their tables are laid out with white linen tablecloths, and they sit down and drink and eat together. Yeah, it was incredibly civilized. Well, this is similar, 1899. So Swanee beats Texas 12-0. That night, the German club throws a ball on behalf of the Swanee team. And Texas was co-ed at the time, so there were young ladies there. They danced. They probably had some drink. And then they had to leave the ball because they had to get on their train. They took it overnight. They reached Houston. And that same day that they arrived in Houston, they played Texas A&M in Houston. And they shut out the Aggies 11-0. Then they got on the train that night. And they rode the train to New Orleans and they shut out Tulane 23-0. Now, they took the day. This is where I deviate from the historical record just a bit. They took that next day. That was, you know, they had one day off for the six, you know, for the five games in 6 days. They had one day off. They 1899 team actually took that day after the Tulane game off. That was their day off. In my book, they don't take that day off. And the reader can discover, you know, why I possibly made that change. But so the actual team, yeah, they got on the train from Houston after beating Texas A&M 11-0. And they went and they beat Tulane 23-0. And then they went to Baton Rouge and they beat LSU 34-0. And they went to Memphis and they shut out Ole Miss 12-0. So they had nothing but shutouts and played five games in 6 days. I mean, just the train ride alone, let alone getting on the field and playing a game that, you know, people often say, well, wasn't the game much more brutal back then? And it was in many ways. It was more like hand-to-hand combat, and in various other ways, it was more, you know, very few players wore helmets, and they were such rudimentary helmets anyway. But, you know, of course, today we have, you know, the physics of, you know, incredibly big men moving incredibly fast. And so it's brutal in different ways. Yeah, so to get out there and scrap and play that kind of football and riding on a train overnight, it's just extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if how many of us have tried to sleep on a train. Even with the ones that have the bed cars, which I'm sure they had some kind of bed, it's not very pleasant. And you know, that clickety clack. And I'm sure it was much worse 120 years ago than it is to our modern era too. It's, you know, probably no suspension in those trains. And but yeah, you know,
I don't know how they endured it. I really don't.
I mean, we know they didn't have air conditioning, so it was probably hotter than the Dickens down there too.
Yeah. Well, thankfully it was fall, the first game of the trip was, I want to say, November 9th. But you know, in the South, we can have warm, balmy nights in November. I mean, it's not unheard of. But you know, real quickly, you were talking about Henry Jordan, who represents Cal Burroughs. This is in a recollection of a 1899 Swanee Tiger. He talked about how and this guy actually did say there were two, even though we don't have the name of another trainer. He was like the one guy that said there were two. He said one of the reasons why we succeeded is we had a couple of rub men. And he said, you know, he said, big black fellows, and he said they would rub our legs until we fell asleep. And it strikes me as, you know, it's almost like having a Charlie horse that really doesn't go away completely, and this is going on for days, and then in between getting the rubdowns. You're going out on a field and colliding with other human beings and dragging them down. And, you know, yeah.
And it, yeah, like you said, the games were more brutal. It was almost like going into a street fight every game and doing that day after day. That's got to pay a toll on your body, mentally and physically. And amazing that they could have that endurance to even play those games, let alone be as successful as they were.
It's a friend of mine, after she read it, she said, this is a story of human endurance.
Absolutely.
That's what this is. Yeah.
You know, I think one of the more amazing things, and, you know, I know when I first heard the story, I heard it years ago, and just, you know, they're saying, okay, they played these six teams. Okay. You know, they're a small school. They went and they played a bunch of price other six schools I never heard about. When I started hearing the school names that we still recognize today as being, you know, powerhouses in the South, or at least they've had some glory at some point in college football, you're sitting there, it's shocking. Your jaw falls on the floor, you know, because, you know, even Tulane and, you know, A&M and, you know, the Longhorns and the Ole Miss, and you go on and on, and you're like, wow, these are, you know, you throw a Bama and a Georgia in there, you got just about all the SEC in there, you know? So it's just a great, great story that I don't think it can ever be touched again with the success that they had. It's really, really remarkable.
It is remarkable. And you mentioned the SEC. Swanee continued to be competitive in the South, and really one of the top teams in the South, into the teens, into the 19 teens. And, but then, as football became bigger and bigger and the bigger schools started spending money on scholarships and they could just out promote Swanee. I mean, Swanee's still this school, all male school that, by the way, it was very hard for them to have home games because nobody wanted to go to this remote mountaintop to play in front of 250 people or 300 people. Cause there's no gate, you don't make any money doing that. But Swanee, when they got to the 20s, during that decade, they did not beat a single SEC team. Yet in 1932, when the SEC was formed right here in Knoxville, Tennessee, Swanee was made part of the original SEC, and they had not beaten an SEC team in 10 years. So it was completely out of tribute. They were paying homage to this team, and that's another argument for the idea that Swanee football launched Southern college football. They didn't win a single SEC game and they left the SEC in 1940, but just the fact that the SEC, all these big schools that formed in 32, said, "Yeah, we want SEC, we want Swanee in here."
Now, I guess something that it goes out in the narrative of the story, and you tell me this is, if you know how true this is, or if you found this in your research. Now, one of the reasons that they took such exhaustive trip and aggressive trip, was to try to regain some financial wherewithal from their rivalry with Vanderbilt, who they decided not to play that year, and they lost a lot of gate receipt that year, so they were trying to. Luke Lee was trying to make up a little bit. Is that got some truth to the story?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not the sole reason, but it's one of the reasons. I mean, the school and Luke Lee knew that they needed money to advance the football program. Also, the school needed money because they were also having difficulty getting students to come all the way up on the mountain. But the Vanderbilt situation also played into this, and money's been in football from the very start, right? So their primary rival was Vanderbilt, who had a really good team at that time. Swanee beat them in 98, and this was always played in Nashville because they could get a big crowd, which back then was, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people. But they could get a big crowd, bigger town, obviously big town. And so they'd always play on Thanksgiving. And Luke Lee didn't like the structure of the deal, the revenue sharing deal with Vanderbilt. And he was a student manager in 98 too. And I also read something that indicated that he also thought they might have cheated Swanee. And so in addition to the terms not being that favorable for Swanee, there's also the possibility that he believed they were actually cheating his team at the gate, his school at the gate. So there are some letters that go back and forth between Luke Lee and the student manager at Vanderbilt negotiating for the 99 game, for the 1899 game. And Luke Lee says, you know, you're not being reasonable. If this is the case and these are the terms, we are not going to play Vanderbilt this year. Well, what he did get in 98 was $750 to play Vanderbilt. And so they might have been cheated at the gate, but that was still a big chunk of money. Yeah, that was a big chunk of money back then for Swanee, for anybody, right. But especially the school that was struggling. So he had to come up with a way to make up that deficit, but he wanted to do more than make up that deficit. You know, he really wanted to fill the coffers at Swanee. So he came up with this scheme to make money by going all the way out to Austin, Texas, and then play teams on the way back, which was what he did. And he negotiated terms with each of those schools that were acceptable to him and were favorable for Swanee. And in 98, they actually went to Texas and played Texas in 98, but they didn't play anyone on the way back. So maybe it was on that long, long train ride back to Swanee in 98 where he thought, you know what? We could pick up some money playing teams on the way back, you know, but who knew he would go for 5 and 6 days, you know, but again, he wanted something spectacular. He wanted to show the rest of the South, hey, we're your general, line up behind us. We're going somewhere. And he wanted to show the Northeast, hey, you need to start paying attention to us. So he had to do something. He had to get his guys to do something amazing. And they did.
Well, he definitely did that. Okay, so you said earlier, you know, these six games were part of a 12-game schedule in 1899 for them, and they of course, you know, went in undefeated. Now, where did this? Was this like at the end of the season they did this trip? Was it middle of the season? How was it in relation to the other games?
Okay, so the Texas game was their fifth game of the season. They had already played four games before they got on the train for this epic trip.
Okay.
So their season started October 23rd against Georgia in Atlanta, and they shut out the Dogs 12-0. 2 days later, also in Atlanta, so they stayed, and they played Georgia Tech and shut Tech out 32-0. And then they played Tennessee. And they actually the University of Tennessee's football program was so embryonic that they actually had to say yes to a small school on the other side of the Cumberland Mountains and come all the way to Swanee to play Swanee. And then they did. And my poor Vols were beat 46-0. Up late October on
so
20.
This truly was an SEC schedule even back in 1899.
Yeah, it was.
A little bit of the Big 12.
Yeah, well, it really was. Yeah. And of course, Texas is moving into the SEC, and Georgia Tech was part of the SEC way back when.
Right.
But they beat Southwestern Presbyterian from Clarksville. They beat them 54-0. And so they had four shutouts going into this trip. And then they played the five games in six days. And then, so that was nine. And then after they got back to Swanee, they had 2 weeks off and they finished their season with, Cumberland Presbyterian that they shut out 72-0. And I'm blanking. Oh, Auburn. They played Auburn, who at the time was coached by John Heisman. And then they played North Carolina in Atlanta for what turned out to be the Southern Conference. It was called Southern Conference then, Southern Conference Championship against North Carolina, December 5th.
Wow.
So 12-0, and they, yeah, we'll leave the Auburn game. We'll leave that alone. So
yeah,
people can enjoy that with a blank slate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, very interesting. Great research and great, storytelling on that. Let's share once again the name of the book, David, and where folks can get a copy of it.
Okay, so the name of the book is Iron Tigers, a novel inspired by the team that conquered Dixie and launched Southern football. All you have to do is type in Iron Tigers. On Amazon, you need to type in Iron Tigers Drews, D as in David, R-E-W-S. Book Baby, you just put Iron Tigers in, or you can go to my website, irontigersfootball.com, and you can read a summary of the book, one-page summary. You can watch a 90-second video, and you can also order the book from that website, irontigersfootball.com.
Okay, absolutely. It sounds like a great idea. Now, you had told me earlier that you're going to be making a trip to Sewanee College and do some promotion of the book. Why don't you, if you got some dates and times there, if people are in the area, they want to meet the author and shake your hand and see you at the site of where these fantastic men played ball, that'd be kind of a cool thing. So maybe if you could share that information.
I'll be there October 7th. It's a Saturday. It's a family weekend at Sewanee. It's a home football game. And I don't have the times yet, and I don't know if I'm going to be at the bookstore or possibly somewhere else on campus. But if you go to if your listeners go to irontigersfootball.com, they can also subscribe to receive email updates from me. And I promise I will not inundate you with emails. I've had that email address up now, that's just subscription option up now on my website for probably 6-7 months. And I've sent out 2 emails, but as I do get the fall book signings locked down, I'm not going to do 2,500 miles. But
well, that was my next question. I was expecting a long train ride for you.
Yeah. I'll be in the comfort of my car. But yeah, I'm going to try to do something like Knoxville to Sewanee to Nashville to Memphis and on down and back up like through Georgia. But I'll have all those dates. Once I get those dates and times and locations locked down, I'll send them out to, my e-newsletter subscribers. And newsletter is really a misnomer because, again, I've sent out one, and I really, I know what it's like to get bombarded with when you subscribe to something. So I don't want to load people up. And, but yeah, irontigersfootball.com. That's the best bet.
All right. Well, great. Well, David, we thank you so much for first of all, researching and telling the story of this team and preserving the football history. And secondly, and foremost, coming on and sharing it with us today. And we really love it. Love the book. Love the story, and appreciate you, sir. So thank you.
You're very welcome, Darren. And I want to thank you again for having me on Pigskin Dispatch. Earlier, you and I were talking, I had mentioned that I get up early every morning and I do exercises, and I have 3 podcasts that I listen to while I'm doing those exercises. And Pigskin Dispatch is one of them. And for your first time listeners, just keep listening, because it's always a surprise and it's always well researched. And Darren is a great guy to listen to early in the morning. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you, David.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.